Okay.
Yes.
Hi, welcome to the Bernie Sanders workshop.
Who's Bernie?
We'll learn about Bernie Sanders.
He's not coming.
He's not coming. But we have two great guests. I'm going to first introduce them. Bernard Sampson has been a member of the CPUSA since 1977. He joined the CPUSA in L.A. He spent time in the USSR in 1981. He is the club chair of the Houston branch of the CPUSA, a member of the CPUSA National Committee, a member of the Texas Organizing Project, Working America, a precinct chair in Houston, Texas for the Democratic Party, and the NAACP. He is a native Texan. He has worked in the Harley-Davidson motorcycle industry for the last 21 years. Jason Schulman is co-editor of the Socialist Journal New Politics and the editor of Rosa Luxemburg, Her Life and Legacy. His newest book is Neoliberal Labor Governments and the Union Response, The Politics of the End of Laborism. He teaches political science at St. Francis College. And so to start, I guess we'll have Jason first.
Forgive me if I'm being somewhat lazy, but basically what I'm going to do is take the most relevant portions of the piece on Bernie Sanders and the Democratic Party that is available in the winter 2016 issue of New Politics. I have a few copies here. Should any of you who wish to purchase one, I would very much appreciate that. Thank you. I want to start out just by talking about the peculiarities of the American political system, and particularly the peculiarities of American political parties, particularly the big two American political parties, the Democrats and Republicans. Certainly, both of them have bourgeois origins. No one denies that. Nobody on the left denies that. And at least at earlier points in history, they functioned more like traditional European-style parties that could control who it is that runs for office on their ballot line, just the way that traditional parliamentary parties do in the rest of the world. But since reforms, if one wants to call them those, that were instituted beginning, I think, in the late 1910s, and then which spread across the country over the course of the 20th century, both the Democratic Party and the Republican Party have fundamentally changed structurally. The political machines that had their party bosses, which used to control who could run for office on which party label, particularly where the Democrats are concerned, are overwhelmingly a thing of the past. Arthur Lippo, he recently died, he wrote an important book, which I hope everyone reads someday, called Political Parties and Democracy, wrote this. Only in America is it true that direct membership participation in the parties does not exist except in the sense that individuals register their party preference with an official agency of the state or are habitual voters for one or another party. The party themselves and the choice of candidates are strictly regulated by law in the states in which the individual parties exist. As a party, control over its own candidates is virtually non-existent. That's to say, both the Republicans and the Democrats, and I think this is also true for the Greens and the Libertarians, wherever they have a ballot line, they are state-run ballot lines. They're not private, voluntary associations that can control who runs on their ballot line. They can't control who becomes a member. And so what I think many of us, particularly those of us who have learned from the Marxist tradition and understand political parties in as representing specific social classes, and they do, don't quite understand about the Democratic Party ballot line is that it is not, I don't believe that it is necessarily the case that if you are running for office as a Democrat, that you are necessarily being sustained and disciplined by the mobilization of capitalist wealth, even if it's capitalist wealth outside the Democratic Party per se. And it is this which has allowed Sanders to run the kind of campaign that he has where he's not taking big corporate cash. And he himself has admitted that the reason that he's running as a Democrat, and he said this on television, he's running as a Democrat because that's the only way he can get media coverage. If he ran as an independent, he would get even less media coverage than he's currently getting. And when he admitted this, many people in the Democratic Party establishment went apoplectic. I'm sure some of you have seen Donna Brazile, throw a hissy fit precisely about that. Means he's not a real Democrat, as if there was any such thing. There is no such thing as a real Democrat. But if the two big parties were real parties, it's unlikely, very unlikely, that Sanders would be able to run for president in the first place. Each candidate, both in the Democrat Party and the Republican Party, run on their own specific political platforms. There is an official Democratic Party and Republican Party platform that is adopted at the national conventions every 4 years, and then it's completely forgotten about and no one ever reads it. And party leaders often find it all but impossible to ensure that all elected Democrats will vote in legislatures the way that they are supposed to or expected to. So you'll find different Democrats and Republicans will vote in different ways, with no fear that they will be kicked out of the party for disloyalty, because there's no legal basis by which they can be kicked out. Unlike in parliamentary systems where, let's say, if you are a dissident member of the British Labour Party, Tony Blair, and this happened, Ken Livingstone was kicked out of the British Labour Party by Tony Blair. That sort of thing can't happen here. It is true that Democrats are overwhelmingly ruling class politicians, and I would never deny otherwise. Many of them do rely on capitalist wealth, and they have an advantage in our political system, just as in our single-member district, winner-take-all electoral system, those who run for office as Democrats or as Republicans have an advantage over those who don't, because it's very difficult for independent parties to get on the ballot in the first place in most places in the country. And it's also true that at the national level, even the most left-wing Democrats, the ones who do vote the right way most of the time, will take some corporate political action committee money, some corporate PAC money, even if proportionally they take more money from labor than capital. Now, why does that happen? I don't think it's primarily because they are Democrats. I think it's because we have a particularly awful campaign finance system. And Sanders is not wrong to keep harping on this in every speech that he gives about our terrible, corrupt campaign finance system, which allows the billionaire class to to buy politicians. But I do want to say that while corporate money may buy access to politicians, it doesn't always influence them in regards to votes, at least if proportionally they are taking more money from labor and from ordinary people than they are from companies. And this is what explains why the leftmost Democrats are able to vote the right way most of the time. On Israel-Palestine, it's a different question, right? We all know that there's virtually no elected politician who has a good position on Israel-Palestine, and Sanders himself is rather imperfect, but I think he's imperfect because he's imperfect, not because of corporate influence. But as long as the current rotten system of private financing continues, and as long as the labor movement remains a shadow of its former self, you will find few progressive politicians, at least at the national level, who take no money at all from corporate PACs. So that requires a change in the campaign finance system. But given these particular circumstances, these particularly unique American circumstances, where we have parties that aren't really parties, and a particularly oligarchical system of campaign financing, I don't consider it a betrayal of class struggle politics to support the leftmost Democrats under these particular circumstances, and I don't consider it a betrayal of class struggle politics to be involved in the Sanders campaign. I think if we aren't, we're missing a particular opportunity to connect with millions of working class people who are being exposed to terms like democratic socialism and political revolution for the first time and in a positive way, even if Sanders' current interpretation of those terms is more moderate than what I personally would use. That doesn't mean that I think that it's at all likely that left liberals and radical leftists could take over the entirety of the Democratic Party. I consider that highly unlikely, but primarily because, aside from the fact that you'd have to win so many races simultaneously, which would be very difficult, it's rather hard to turn what is a state-run ballot line into a real political party which could be democratically controlled by its members. And that is indeed what we need. We need an independent left-wing party which is one person, one vote, democratically controlled by its members, and does not have the sort of quasi-authoritarian hierarchy that exists, unfortunately, in far too many political parties of all stripes. And I do wish that Walter Reuther and the UAW had done what they said that they were going to do in 1948, which was to spearhead the creation of a labor party, but they didn't do it, and CIO didn't do it, and we are where we are. So how do we get from our current political situation to one where we can actually reach an independent party of the left, which I doubt will be structured like a traditional British Labour Party style Labour Party, particularly since organized labor as it is too simply too weak to form such a thing. Even the most left-wing unions like National Motorists United will regularly support left Democrats. They don't feel that they have a choice in the matter, and under current circumstances, I don't think they do. They can't just ignore electoral politics. So what I think we have to do under present circumstances is to be critical supporters of the Sanders campaign from within. We do not have to justify every single political position that he takes. I do think that if we act, say, as sympathetic critics from the outside, which is what certain people and organizations on the left are currently doing, we will not be heard, we will be utterly ignored, and we may be dismissed. But if we are in the fray, as it were, as critical supporters of Sanders, and we explain that we support the campaign, but we have some criticisms of Sanders, and we think that as valuable as the social democratic reforms that he's proposing and wants to bring into existence are, it's necessary to go beyond capitalism itself, which is certainly, that's not what he is proposing, not that he could get it even if he became president, because you don't get socialism that way by electing someone president. But we can deepen the meanings of terms like democratic socialism and political revolution in an explicitly Marxist way that goes beyond the way that Bernie Sanders is doing in a sort of leftish social democratic way. But he and his campaign are providing an opening for the Marxist left if we just, you know, take it. And just as a final note, and I'll stop. Some people have suggested, I think particularly in Socialist Alternative, that Bernie is definitely going to lose. I'm not going to make grand pronouncements about whether he'll win or lose. I do think that the superdelegates represent a problem, and they may be too big of a problem to overcome. If it turns out that the main barrier that prevents Sanders from becoming the Democratic nominee for president is just the superdelegates, that could turn out to be the one thing that really splits the left wing of the Democrats from the right wing, that exposes the Democratic Party as a fundamentally undemocratic party. And that might lead to the building of at least the foundations of an independent left party, particularly also if the Republican Party splits, which everyone seems to think is rather likely if there's going to be a broker convention and either Trump gets the nomination and then conservatives who can't deal with more traditional conservatives who can't deal with Trump split away and run their own candidate for president, whoever that might be, or there are backroom shenanigans which prevent Trump from becoming the Republican nominee, and then Trump says, screw you guys, I'm running as an independent. And who knows, I bet you it'll be called the American Party, because that's the type of guy.
No, Trump Party.
Now, you'll call it the American Party, because how can you go against the American Party, right? Then you're un-American if you don't support the American Party. And that's the type of thing that Trump would do, I'm pretty sure. If the Republican Party splits, then there's a far greater likelihood that the Democratic Party will split, and we may temporarily see a four-party system. But structurally, we have a two-party system. So two of those parties aren't going to survive. And I sincerely hope that the Democratic Party is one of those that will survive, and we can finally get the genuinely Democratic party of the left that we've needed for decades and decades and decades. I'll leave it at that for now.
Very good. And I agree with most of what you said. Definitely. You know, I've been involved in the campaign for Bernie for, since November of 2014. While he was still making the decision, we set up the first website in the United States calling for Bernie to win, called Houstonians for Bernie Sanders. And we've been leading in the coalition in Houston, Texas. We've made over 3 million calls. We're still phone banking. Our official headquarters just had to close, so now we're using the party headquarters and people's homes to organize the Bernie Sanders campaign there. And when I mean telephone, we're doing telephone banking. We're calling California, et cetera. In fact, one of the people on our exec was just hired by the Bernie campaign as a full-time staff. She's quitting her job. She's going to California, et cetera, to work in the campaign all the way to Philadelphia. So our involvement has been very, very strong in this campaign. We don't agree totally with everything Bernie says. There's no doubt about it. But Bernie has a success that no other socialist has had. Now, some people say he's not a socialist, but every socialist defines socialism a little differently, and we all have disagreements, possibly, on what socialism is and what the program should be at this moment. Some people believe in a maximal program, and some believe in a minimal program as a step toward that end, and that's what I believe in. I think if you come out with the maximum program today, the overthrow of capitalism, you're not going to get anywhere. And I also believe that because of the structure that Jason was talking about, but running as a third-party candidate is a losing proposition from the very beginning. One unique thing about American parties, both the Republican and the Democratic Party, is they're able to co-opt any third movement by moving to the left. Take a look at Hillary just within the Democratic Party because of Bernie. If Bernie was not running in the Democratic Party right now, Hillary would not have half the position she has. And if they don't have her and they had a different candidate, that candidate would also be doing it. Because the Democratic Party and the Republican Party cannot control who runs in their elections. In a sense, they lose control of it. It's not like the old style where they choose and pick who runs. It's still a capitalist party, there's no doubt about it. But it's a party that the left can work in, can get the publicity, and can organize the left wing within. Again, I agree not to take over the Democratic Party. And, you know, people say, well, what is the Democratic Party? You know, who controls it? It's the elected officials, the people that are the superdelegates, it's the donors, and some sectors of the capitalist class that control that party. And that party, both parties are built as a machine to keep the bourgeoisie in power. That's what they're there for. But the struggle to loosen the grip of who runs in those parties has been a Democratic struggle that's been going on for decades. And we used to not have primaries. Primaries opens it up to anybody who wants to run in those campaigns. It doesn't mean that the DNC isn't going to work against you, et cetera. We've certainly seen it in this campaign where they openly favor Hillary Clinton. But it can be overcome. And so that's an inroad that the left needs to really look at. I believe that independent socialists should stay independent. I do not believe that Bernie Sanders, by any means, is a member of the Democratic Party, except in the sense that he's become one on paper so that he can run, get the publicity, and at the same time, there's another aspect to it. It's not just that he gets the publicity, but historically, most people on the left have said that voting for a third party is a wasted vote. And you can see what happened with the Green Party and the Democratic Party in 2000 with Gore. And what the consequences of that were. We may not like it, but that's the way it is. We're not a parliamentary system. It's different. There are certain differences of exceptionalism with American politics that don't exist in other countries. And we have to take advantage of that as Marxists. And to put a curse on both houses, you know, again, you look at the 1840s, and I know they have some disagreements here, but the early communists helped found the Republican Party. There were 20 of them at the founding convention. And of course, at that time, it was a fight for capitalism to overthrow slavery. There's no doubt. But here we have something similar in the sense of the threat from the ultra-right and the military-industrial complex, the Tea Party, et cetera. And I would say American forms of fascism that are in the wings of that. For instance, in Houston, Texas, the Tea Party has its own militia. We have to look at the militia groups. We have to look at the endorsements of all the fascist organizations for a Republican candidate, what this means. We're not talking strictly, you know, when you look at this, you're looking at thousands and thousands of armed people. It's very dangerous. We also have to look at the consequences of not being involved in the Bernie campaign with the question of the Supreme Court, federal judges, et cetera, and what this means. You can march all day. You can mobilize millions of people. You can have legislators pass laws. But the Supreme Court, in the end, will decide what happens and what rights people have. And with the disintegration of women's rights and civil rights, et cetera, what's happened to unions, it's important for our democracy and the advance towards socialism to make sure that we look at the entire picture and the consequences of our action. In my view, you know, a vote for the Green Party or third party right now is a vote for the extreme right. And Bernie Sanders is, in my opinion, is a socialist. I think he is more radical than what he's saying right now. I look at his past. I look at his thing on Eugene Debs. I think he's a Eugene Debs type of socialist who, under the circumstances, has modified his views to run for election at this time. But to say that his who he would appoint as federal judges, et cetera, you know, compared to what would happen with the Republicans, which would be catastrophic for all of us in this room. Look at the decision on the union question recently with Scalia not in anymore, how that's changed. Major victory for the unions just because he's not in there. And we're not talking about one Supreme Court judge. We're probably talking about two. And that's for generations because they're elected from my hierarchy. So I think that we have to look at, we can't allow our dogmas to control. Our dogmas don't control the objective conditions. The objective conditions, as Marxists, is what we have to look at and take our dogmas and adapt them to that. Because that the objective conditions is the reality of the situation we're in. And if we deny that and we stick to a dogma that says it's something else, then we're out of touch. Now, the second question is, what do we do with this movement? What's the maturity of the people that are joining? And I'll tell you, most people have no understanding what socialism is. And the people that join, I'd say 1 in 30 actually call themselves an actual socialist. So what Bernie's doing is he's bringing millions of people, so far at least 6 million people have voted for Bernie Sanders. And if you compare that to the votes of any other socialist in American history, it's quite amazing. And so this is a question of us taking advantage of this and how we can mold this. And you can only mold it by working in the campaign and working daily with the people that are telephone banking, walking door to door, that come to the meetings and discuss. For us, we have a socialist reading group. We bring those people in Houston. We have some of the larger Bernie meetings with 100 and more people at the party headquarters. And we're talking mostly Bernie people who are being exposed to socialism for the first time. We have literature, et cetera. We have movie nights and everything else. So what we're trying to do in Houston is to build a coalition, a progressive coalition, in which will continue whether Bernie is elected or not. It's essential that it continue if he's elected because we're going to need mass, millions of people marching, voting, and putting political pressure on liberal Democrats, whatever it may be, to help him pass legislation. Without it, won't happen. And then we also need it because if he does lose, we're going to need something to build. This is the first chance we've had to build a mass movement, you know, after an election and to begin to build what a lot of people want. So I think this is historical. I think we have a chance that we can allow it to slip out of our fingers. This isn't like the anti-war movement, et cetera. This is something that's based on electoral politics, not basic anarchism where people just march and people give speeches, et cetera. This is an electoral block where people are being trained in electoral science, how to get people elected. It's something the left ignores greatly. They spend a lot of time on the ideological struggle and on the economic struggle, i.e. the trade union struggle. But on electoral struggle, you know, we don't spend enough time, including in our, you know, in the CPUSA. There's not enough emphasis on it. We're trying to change that. So the real struggle is going to be the unity of all three of these.
So now I guess we'll have some questions. Yes, Ed?
So I'd like to raise a question on dogma and reality, especially with reference to the concept of the ultra-right and fascism, because certainly Jason, as a scholar of Rosa Luxemburg, this history of fascism is no stranger to you, and yet I take it there's a kind of differing conception when it comes to the present. So how do you assess the existence and implications of fascist or ultra-right politics in the United States today? And then kind of second question, do you see the task as, you know, insofar as there are armed militias, is the point to ultimately be able to recruit such people to a socialist politics, or is it more like that's just an inevitably and structurally fascist constituency in American society? And thirdly, how does, for example, campaigning for what I think many would characterize as like corporate Democrats, such as Clinton or Emmanuel, how does that actually succeed in kind of turning the corner against the ultra right?
Yeah, let's just for that time because I was third.
Okay, since
yeah.
I was.
We have a question here.
I already have a list.
Let answer, but I'm just sort of.
I have you guys down.
Okay. If I could see if I can remember all three of them properly, because I have such a ridiculous short-term memory. In regards to the question of fascism, it's been kind of difficult for me to properly categorize Donald Trump. I don't think he's a fascist in the traditional European sense, but on the other hand, he is encouraging violence. He is encouraging violence at his rallies, and he justifies violence against people who, Latinos who may in fact be here legally, but who are perceived as being illegal immigrants because they have the wrong skin tone and speak Spanish. So, He certainly seems to be breaking the boundaries of normal bourgeois politics, right? It may be academic as to whether he's really a fascist or not. I do think that his campaign has been a means by which actual fascists and white nationalists and various other undesirables have been able to congregate together. I don't believe he's going to become president regardless of what happens. So I do not think that American fascism is going to be a... And fascists don't really take power legally anyway, so I don't think that's a threat. Although, certainly when you have a major presidential candidate encouraging violence, that is a problem. And I agree with you that actively supporting Hillary Clinton or Rahm Emanuel does not help to solve that problem. I suspect I have a difference with the CP comrade here. If Clinton wins the Democratic nomination and Sanders does not run as an independent, and whether he does or does not, I can't predict the immediate future, we'll have to see what happens in the Democratic National Convention. Neither I nor will DSA be advocating a vote for Hillary Clinton. I suspect members in swing states will do what they feel they need to do, but we will not be out there working on Hillary Clinton's campaign and advocating a vote for her. People who feel that they have to vote for Clinton in order to beat Trump, presuming it's Trump and not Cruz, I don't think it'll be Cruz, will do that anyway, regardless of what we say. What was the second question?
How do you imagine a sort of fascist constituency, for example, what is to be done with the reality of armed militias?
I really don't know what to do about that. I don't doubt that there are some working class people who conceivably could be won over to our perspective who are involved in such movements. But overall, if you have a real commitment to white nationalism, and it's always white nationalists who form these groups, how to break through to them is something I simply don't know how to do. And the third part of your question was?
I think that's okay.
Okay, so let's take two questions from the floor. So we'll take Chris Long.
Well, let's keep him in.
Oh, you want to? Okay.
Yeah, I want to say something.
Yes.
Donald Trump is a political genius on the right. There's no doubt about it. No doubt about it. And what he's done is he realized when 16 people announced they were going to run, how would he put himself aside from everybody else? How would he go into an early lead? Because without doing that, he would have stayed where he was, or where most of the other ones did. And what he did is he came out with policies. He understood, first off, that in every country in the world, about 33% of the population are made up of degenerates, right-wing, racist, sexist, homophobes, etc. He understands that. And so he went after those people because that is one of the bases, the base of the Tea Party and the right wing of the Republican Party. And so everything he said about immigrants, attacking John McCain, all of this stuff was to mobilize those people from him and to split the Tea Party from Ted Cruz. And he was totally successful. And everything he said that was outrageous was put on the papers. He had free publicity. He never had to spend any of his money. So the first thing Trump did was mobilize the most reactionary sectors of the American people. And those people cannot be won over to Bernie Sanders or to anything, you know, anything. They're a bunch of degenerates, and that's how they are. And he mobilized them. So that's the genius of Trump. Now, is Trump a fascist? No. He's a right-wing populist, but he's supported by fascists. And fascism in the United States has different forms than fascism in Europe, etc., just like bourgeois democracy has a different form in the United States than it does in Europe. So, you know, it's different. So he's drawn those people, and etc. Now, the question is, what happens if the million-dollar question is Sanders doesn't win? Well, he's not going to run as a third party. It's not going to work. And number two, he's already said basically that he will endorse Hillary. Now, Hillary has voted 93% of the time the same as Sanders historically. That 7% difference is major differences, there's no doubt about it. I do not like Hillary. I don't like her. She's a dishonest person. She's a warmonger. The whole bit, there's no doubt about that. I don't like anything about the Clintons. But as a communist, my struggle is against the ultra-right. My struggle is against what's going to happen if we don't vote for her. I will vote for her. How strong I work for, I don't know. I will hold my nose and I will vote for her because the struggle against what's going to happen if Trump or Cruz, whoever it may be, wins with the Supreme Court, labor legislation, civil rights legislation, et cetera, to me is too drastic. I do not believe that we should support people or stay out of the struggle and allow people to run this country into the ground and to attack our basic civil rights. The struggle for socialism is based around the struggle for democracy. To win the battle of democracy, as Marx says, to take and state power. And so, some people I know on the ultra-left relish the idea that, you know, the capitalist system, they believe in this theory of impoverishment. They believe that, the working class will become so poor and desperate that they will rise up against capitalism. No. What happens is they're totally crushed. Look at Nazi Germany and everywhere else. You know, the way the working class grows and moves towards socialism is through victories of the battle for democracy. And in that democracy, finding out what a sham bourgeois democracy is, that's where they learn their lesson. And they understand that a workers' democracy and a proletarian state is the only solution. So my view is the basic struggle against the ultra-right. So I will support Clinton. I hope she doesn't win. But yes, I will support her. Yeah.
All right. Let's take two questions from the floor. And choose your favorite question.
What if I don't have a question, I would like to make a comment.
No, please, absolutely.
So my name is Christoph. I'm from the International Bolshevik Tendency. And a few things come to mind when I listen to the comrade speakers. The first thing that I thought was actually something that Chris Cotrone said yesterday. He quoted Marx, and I paraphrase, Marx said one of the key principles or tasks of the proletariat is to take independent action. There must be independent class action by the workers. And this is basically a concept that has been repeated by Marxists ever since Marx. Why? Because the interests of the working class is directly counterposed to the interests of the bourgeoisie. There is no common ground. And when Marx realized that and shared that insight with the other activists at the time, the conclusion was very clear. The working class had to stop being an appendix of the bourgeoisie. They had to start to chart its own course in order to achieve its own liberation by itself, because nobody else is going to do it for the working class. So that's the premise, I think, for revolutionary socialists. What the comrade speaker suggests is something very different. I noticed that you spend a lot of time justifying that Sanders is running on a democratic ticket. I suspect you do that because you've read some Marx and Lenin and Luxembourg, and deep down you know that there's something fundamentally wrong with that concept. That's why you spend so much time trying to justify it. All of these people, the Marxists before us, spend a lot of their time explaining to the working class that you must not enter into coalitions with the bourgeoisie, that you have to keep your politics separate, that the main enemy is the bourgeoisie at home, even during times of war. They were the lessons of the First, Second, and Third International, the revolution, Third International, I should say. Now, to suggest that because of the peculiarities of the US system, you can just sort of join the Democrats and make it kind of your party or make it your platform, that means you forget that this is the party, or one of the parties, of the ruling class. The Democrats are bankrolled and controlled by Wall Street. They will always defend their interests. You can't just wander in and say, hey, let's have a bit of socialism here. How about it? That's not how party politics work. And even though it's a different kind of party to the social democracy in Europe, we're still talking about the party of the ruling class. If you want to smash the system, which you do want if you are a revolutionary socialist, you need to spend your time creating a party of your own class, a party of the working class. Sanders is going into the capitalist party and is trying to bring people back into the fold. He's not trying to break with the capitalist party. He's dragging people back into them. He's not advancing the goal of socialism. He's dragging people who might actually split from them back in. This is the biggest danger about Sanders, that he's preventing independent working class action through his attempt to run on a democratic ticket.
Okay.
Very good.
Jason, you mentioned the possibility of a left-wing split from the Democrats, mm-hmm. and I think that specter has been haunting the discussion around the Sanders campaign lately a lot. However, imagining a left split from the Democrats would, for me, that would mean, I mean, what is the left of the Democrats? As, for example, Congressional Progressive Caucus. So what we're looking at, when we're looking at a left split from the Democrats, it's not a socialist party, it's not a labor party, we're looking at a progressive party. So a party that would very much be limited to the existing constituencies of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, and not to an expanded sort of working class base or a socialist base. So I wonder if you see that danger, and perhaps to connect this to the comment that you just made about the degenerates that will not ever vote socialist or are just not an interest for us right now. I mean, it's true that a third party would be a progressive party, a CPC party would be a marginal, tiny little sect. Those voters would just return. Those would be purely like former Democratic Party voters would now go to the Progressive Party, whereas the Socialist Party, and I think that the appeal of Sanders is he appeals to Trump voters. He appeals to these degenerates who are not necessarily, in your words, who are not necessarily bound to Republicans or Democrats. So actually, an independent Socialist Party, I think, would have a much wider reach in ways that a left split from the Democrats just would not ever have. I just don't see that possibility. So I wonder if you guys can speak to that. Essentially, it's a question of labor progressive versus socialist independent.
Jason, do you want to primarily speak to your point
When I say a split in the party, I am not primarily talking about the elected officials. I don't doubt that some of the best of them would go to an independent party of Sanders and his base, and I primarily are concerned with the base, that some of them would go over and be thankful that they're no longer in the same party with Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama and their ilk. So the most important thing is to create a party, yes, with a working class base that is democratically controlled by its members, that is not a state-run ballot line like the Democrats are. And that requires, unfortunately, probably the way that state laws work, there would have to be a fair amount of court time done to make sure it's not just something where you go, where anyone can go and register as that party, because then you'll have the same problem all over again. To answer some of Christoph's point, I don't want to simply repeat much of what I said. I have read as much Marx and Lenin and Luxembourg as you have, comrade, I promise you. One of my founding influences was the late Julius Jacobson, who had been in the heterodox wing of the Trotskyist movement in the United States and was the founding co-editor of New Politics and a genuine revolutionary socialist. Instead of Jesse Jackson's run for president as a Democrat in 1988, to take advantage of the facilities offered by a Democratic Party primary involves no necessary compromise of socialist principles, provided that it is being used as a vehicle for propagandizing a position with an eye on building a movement outside the Democratic Party. Jackson failed to do this, and he should be damned for it. But this describes precisely what Sanders is doing and is commendable. Now, what I believe you are basically saying is a variation on the idea that Bernie Sanders is a sheepdog for Hillary Clinton. And this argument has been made by various far leftists. And it would be credible to me, but at the moment there is really no one at all to sheepdog, if we can turn a noun into a verb, because right now there is not even a quasi-mass movement for a left-wing third party. I wish there was. If there was, my judgment of Sanders running in a Democratic primary would be quite different. But the situation is what it is. I do acknowledge that left challengers to the most establishment right-wing Democrats in 1984, 1988, Jesse Jackson's campaign, Dennis Kucinich in 2004, etc., all ended up endorsing the candidate of the ruling class in their respective Democratic presidential primaries once they lost. But they should not have done so, and it's important to realize that they actually did not have to do so, but chose to do so. Most have forgotten, but Jerry Brown did not endorse Bill Clinton in 1992. There's no party rules that could force him to do so. More recently, on the Republican side, you look at Ron Paul. He very openly did not support John McCain in 2008 or Mitt Romney in 2012. He supported minor right-wing party presidential candidates, and yet he remained in office as a Republican. You look at the Seattle Democratic elected officials who endorsed Shama Sawant's re-election campaign, and by the way, I'm very happy that she is where she is, and I hope she gets re-elected from now until infinity. That sort of one people from one party endorsing someone from another party, that's not possible anywhere else in the world. That's an American peculiarity. Can you imagine Canadian liberals endorsing new Democratic Party candidates for office? It's just not doable in any other country. And it further proves that our parties are not real parties because they lack party discipline, and that applying class struggle principles to American electoral politics is a far messier business than it is anywhere else in the world. People make their own history, but not in conditions of their own choosing. I bet all of you know who said that.
Yes. Comrade, I've read a little bit of Lenin and Marx and Rosa Luxemburg, et cetera, as well. And a lot of people have, and people have disagreements on how to interpret it. There's no doubt, legitimate. And we all want the same thing. We all want socialism. We disagree on how we get there. And the question is, how can we have unity in reaching that and without allowing our differences to keep splitting us, which only benefits the ruling class? That's the real challenge for us. So, if I think about the Bolshevik, you're from the Bolshevik tendency. The Bolshevik tendency within the Russian Duma actually voted for liberals, bourgeois liberals, under certain circumstances. They voted for bourgeois liberals when they were faced by czarist, the representative of the czar, and there was an important vote to the working class. Lenin gave instructions that the Bolshevik faction should vote with the bourgeoisie in certain instances, and also in instances where representative of the Black Hundreds were there on the second vote, he always told the Bolsheviks to support bourgeoisie. So there are instances of this happening, and that's under Lenin. Now, this also happened, of course, in many other cases. The problem is that it's not a principle what party we work in. The principle is what our politics are, what the content of our politics are. The rest is strictly tactics on how to achieve it, and we don't make tactics a principle. Otherwise, nobody will agree with anyone, even in your own organization. If we take the logic of what you're saying, we can say the trade union movement is under the leadership of people that support the Democratic Party. So instead of organizing workers within that union, let's form another union. We did that. We had red unions. And again, as I've said in the past, they have never won a single victory because they not only had to fight against the regular, against the bosses, but they had to fight against the union. And historically, it's a fact. The red unions have never won a single strike. The way to go is to go into the NFL and the CIO and change it from within. We want to be where the masses are always. And to stay outside of the mass struggle and a third party politically is to isolate ourselves from this huge movement. There will not be a split in the Democratic Party. Bernie will support Hillary. That's a fact, whether we like it or not. There are a lot of Bernie people that are refusing to support Hillary. That's a fact. There's a lot of them. But they're not organized, and they're not going to form any separate party. And if they do, it'll be just the same thing of any third group. It'll just fade away. That's the reality of the situation. I don't like it. Nobody likes it. But to be utopian about this and to believe that it's possible, it's just a fantasy.
All right. I'm going to take two questions, one from Lucy and then one from Richard.
I wanted to ask how you guys conceive of working within the campaign as a politically educated experience for the people that you're trying to lead. And for example, you've talked about fighting the right. How is that part of this political education? How do you work to expose the Democratic Party machine by merely kind of fighting the right and apologizing for Hillary Clinton? That seems a little bit unclear for me. So
minus a couple of comments leading to a couple of questions. So the first comment is that in the dialogue between you and Kristoff, your main argument for Bernie Sanders seems to be that it's a mass movement and the idea that you have to be sort of aware of the masses. Whereas I have the sense that Crystal has an image of politics of sort of a vanguard educating the masses and not just saying, well, there are millions of people doing something, we have to be there. You have to tell them the truth. So my two comments. One is you mentioned Jesse Jackson, which I'm glad. So it seems to me that there's a fundamental similarity between the Sanders campaign now and the Jackson campaigns of the 80s, but they're reversed in terms of racial dynamics, right? Like where I live is in Western Massachusetts right now, it's like an overwhelmingly white rural area. It was won heavily by Trump and by Sanders. And some of those Sanders people may vote for Trump. And the biggest obstacle to Sanders winning the nomination has actually been non-white voters, which is the opposite of the Jackson campaign. So I would wonder how you talk about the racial dynamics around the Sanders campaign. And the second question, which is also based on a comment, that some of us in this room occasionally read a newspaper called Workers' Vanguard, the newspaper of the Spartacist League, and they had a headline in an article, Bernie Sanders' Imperialist Running Dog. like leaving aside the rhetoric, like basically the what was significant about the article, and this is the question for both of you, is that they bring up basically foreign policy positions. So I have the sense that the people on the left who are pushing most for Sanders like Sanders' domestic policy as sort of a reference of social democracy, but I think they tend to be sort of embarrassed when it comes to questions of foreign policy. So I would sort of like you to address those points, sort of the question about race in terms of the Sanders campaign, the overwhelming white support, the difficulty getting non-white support, and what do you think about the Sanders in terms of not like domestic social democratic reforms, but foreign policy issues?
Okay, well, the African-American vote, why is it going for Clinton overwhelmingly? First off, I think that the major reason is because Bernie's lack of focus on the address of racism in the United States as being central to the rule of capitalism. He puts it all down to one thing, an economic question. Now, he's tried to change...
That's why they're voting for Clinton? That's why they're supporting Clinton.
Well, I'm getting to that. Okay. Yeah, I'm getting to that. I think that for the African-American community, now, where is the African-American support for Bernie? It's among the intellectuals and among the youth. We see it in our group. We have very few elderly, middle-aged African-Americans in the organization. Now, we have lots of young people and stuff. So I think the problem is that the older people have gone through a period where the racism, Jim Crow, et cetera, are still recent memories. The idea that that when a black person goes to the grocery store every day just to leave their house, it's in their consciousness, especially among black males, that to go to the grocery store and back could be a life and death experience. Because when I go to the grocery store and a policeman sees me, I'm not worried that he's just going to stop me because of the color of my skin, but a black person does. The civil rights and basic human rights and democratic rights is the most important thing, survival, I think, in a lot of people's minds. They're tied to the Clinton administration, which they want Clinton. Even though, you know, he ruled a lot of ways against them, they did. And they're tied to, I think, more to the establishment of the Democratic Party. And so you see this break with the youth who want a more militant response, and they can see more of a connection on the economic scale with Bernie, and especially among African-American intellectuals. At least that's what we see. So I think that's the explanation for it. Bernie, in my opinion, is a socialist. He is a socialist, just like everyone else in this room is. But I obviously don't agree with everyone else in this room. But I don't believe any of y'all don't want socialism the same thing I do. I think we're very passionate about the way we achieve it. But y'all are not my enemies. My enemies on the other side, in the capitalist class. And so Bernie Sanders is a socialist. He's got a massive movement. I think that that's a legitimate reason right there, because we don't. We don't. And we have not been able to build a mass movement, a Communist Party, Socialist Workers Party, any group. And here it is. And it's not the same as the Jesse Jackson campaign. We have a socialist party. I worked in the Jesse campaign. In fact, the Communist Party formed the Jesse Jackson campaign in Houston. And when he announced, we organized the first public demonstration where he came and spoke at U of H. We had 10,000 people. That was organized by a member of the Young Communist League, who was a student there named Ian, who was run out of Houston by the police. So, I'm familiar with both campaigns, and they're really quite different. Also, Jesse Jackson, as a person, and his ethics are quite different from Bernie Sanders. Jesse Jackson, for instance, met with Bernie Sanders early on and said, "I'll give you my support if you make me the presidential candidate." And Bernie ignored it. And of course, you can see where it's led to. While Bernie was one of the few people to endorse Sanders and to see that he carried the state of Vermont. So, you know, there's an ethical and moral question. He's not to be trusted, and people in labor don't trust him anymore either. So that's a whole other question. As far as the question that you brought up about working in the Democratic Party with the Bernie people, I mean, do we expose the Democratic Party as a capitalist party? Of course we do. We expose the whole process of the DNC and how they're trying to stop a socialist candidate. We expose the Democratic Party for what it is. But until there's an alternative, we also talk about how we can build a coalition, independent coalition, within the Democratic Party. Again, just because we're members, I mean, I'm a precinct chair, second time I've been a precinct chair, where I had to run for election in the Democratic Party. I don't consider myself a Democrat. I use it as a tool against the ruling class. The proletariat has no arms. The state has the arms. If we can grab a weapon from the state and use it against it, we're going to do it, because we don't have it. If we had it, it would be different. If there was a major third party in the United States and Bernie Sanders ran in the Democratic Party, that would be a betrayal. But there's not. Betrayal is not to support.
I guess Lucy's question spoke more to, like, what do you do actually now as you're working within the Democratic Party to bring people toward a more radical perspective?
We have a socialist reading group. We have people. We have the Bernie people meeting. We've had up to 100 people at the party headquarters several times from the Bernie thing. We have that literature. We talk to them about it. You know, we talk about a class struggle. I mean, this is what we do. This gives us an opportunity to talk to people we would never be able to talk to. We use the internet. We have the Meetup. We have the Facebook. We run that. Anybody is welcome to get on any of these things on the internet for you to see what we're doing.
I'll just partly build on what you said. I think that the Sanders campaign is a much less top-down and strictly controlled affair than what Jackson ran. I mean, Jackson, when he found out that he was not going to be completely in control of the Rainbow Coalition, he killed it. He locked it up. There is nothing like that happening with the Sanders campaign. If, you know, his people for Bernie and this and that for Bernie, these are all far more independent of the Sanders campaign itself than the Rainbow Coalition was. In regards to Bernie's perceived racial problem, I think part of the reason why Sanders didn't receive more of the vote, at least in many of the states that are controlled lock, stock, and barrel by the Republican Party, is that there have been laws passed, the so-called voter ID laws, and these have made it harder for a great many black people to vote. And it's also the case that since we have such a racist criminal justice system, so many black ex-cons, if that's the proper word, have lost the right to vote permanently. And I think many of those people would vote for Sanders over Clinton.
But in states where there was a heavy black vote in the Democratic Party, the black vote went overwhelmingly to Clinton. So, I mean, however people may be being disenfranchised in the general election, but these are people who are actually voting, the vote is going to Clinton. I understood the point about, like, this is like older people and younger people and intellectuals are different, but the great majority of the black vote.
That is, I think if you look at the most recent polls, and you can decide to trust polls or not polls, that is beginning to change. Certainly, if we look at voters of color in general, Sanders won rather heavily against Clinton in Washington State and Alaska, and certainly in Hawaii, which is predominantly people of color. There was now a massive rally in the Bronx just a few days ago, overwhelmingly black and Latino, and you know, these folks are going to support Sanders. Will he win all of New York? I don't know, but he may. What was the other?
I guess what I was trying to, like, would you try and...
What's the point of what are you going to talk to Sanders supporters about if you are working alongside them?
Yeah, and would you call for them to ask for attempts to, like, reform the Democratic Party, like constitutionally or something, or
I mean, to put it another way, you said that the Democratic Party is not a real party,
right?
And what Christoph is advocating for is like a separate, essentially a party. Well, we need a party. The proletariat needs its party,
and I agree that we do.
And so, what are you doing to sort of constitute something like that, aside from sort of like generating a crisis within the Democratic Party that you like? It seems to have.
Well, electoral politics is obviously not the only politics to engage in. I think the most important thing is to get people to understand the peculiarities of the American political system and electoral system, to understand why it is that the ruling class dominates the Democratic Party so easily, so often, to use the opportunity that the Sanders campaign presents in order to present a more radical interpretation of terms like democratic socialism and political revolution to people who are already hearing those words and now have a positive association with them in a country where the word socialist so often has been an insult. If you declare yourself, not too many years ago, if you declared yourself a socialist, most people would look at you as if you were sort of alien being at best. Now it's becoming increasingly normal, certainly for so-called millennials, to consider themselves socialists. They may have a somewhat watered-down conception of what that means. I'm a fairly traditional Marxist. I think socialism means a classless society. That's how Marx and Engels defined it. But it's an opening, and I want to be able to seize that opening, and I don't want to let that chance just go by.
Okay. We're going to take two questions from the floor, one time, and Stephanie.
So thank you both for your comments. I have a question for Bernard. So I really appreciate your clarity and honesty on three points about the Sanders campaign. The first is that you said Sanders is not going to run as a third-party candidate in the event he loses. Rather, he will support Clinton. The second thing is the logical conclusion outcome of the campaign efforts of surrounding Sanders is to be directed towards a Clinton victory in the event that Sanders loses. And thirdly, that your goal is not socialism, but combating the challenge, but trying to combat the challenge presented by people you call degenerates, their attempt to challenge establishment party politics, especially establishment Democrat or establishment Republican party politics. So my question is, like, on these three points, like, why do you think so many leftists who are currently working for Sanders, why won't they admit these three points? What does that tell us about the left?
Well, I think you interpreted the first two correctly. The third one is that socialism is not on the agenda right now. The revolutionary transformation of the state from one class to another is not on the agenda right now. I wish it was, but it's not. Right now on the agenda is building the first steps to build a movement to do that overthrow. And that's where perhaps we have some differences. But so I'm 100% for socialism. I'm 100% for the dictatorship of the proletariat. This is, I think we do it step by step under American conditions. This is the way we do it. But, I'm sorry, what was that?
The first question was, why do you think so many of the leftists working for Sanders won't admit these three points? Or well, now that you're saying the third point doesn't apply, the first two points.
I think communists should be honest. And, you know, I think that a lot of people may, because of they're not clear on politics. They don't have an answer, so they don't give an answer back because they're afraid of the debate, because they really don't know Marxism very well. But I think, you know, I work with DSA. We work very closely in Houston, and we have a lot of agreements. You know, we have some disagreements on the state and stuff, but, you know, we have some disagreements. Actually, most of the DSA people in Houston are going to support Hillary, but they don't like it. They're going to hold their breath in doing it, just like any of us would. They think it's necessary. You know, it's necessary. I don't know. I think all the socialists that, well, with socialist alternative, you know, there's these different sort of positions that we hear in Houston towards Sanders. It's not very clear. Freedomly socialist is the same thing. You know, they're really against him, but I have a feeling they support him because they can't ignore it. And maybe that's a bit of opportunism.
Stefan?
Yeah, thank you. I have one question. You were, and it's also mainly addressed to Bernard. You were talking about that everybody here was a socialist and that we all wanted socialism and that this was, you know, like necessary unity. But at several points of history, for example, when the November Revolution took place in Germany, it were actually socialists that were responsible for killing Rosa Luxemburg and Karl Liebknecht. They were the ones who were giving the allowance and the possibility to nationalists to do it. It was not the Kaiser. And so, if you're going back a bit from that tragedy, Karl Marx was not like endorsing German socialism or utopian socialism, but he was critiquing. was critiquing a movement that was already happening. And so my question here would be if the transition that is what we see right now with Bernie Sanders, is this a movement? If it is, needs this movement to be built up? And is this the same as building up a party, or, you know, like laying the foundation, the basics for this? Can we be sure that this goes into the direction of what Joe said? If we support such a movement, will it transition into a party project necessarily?
We don't know what it will transition to. We only know that if we're not involved in it, there's no chance of it going the direction we want. As far as you're correct about German social democracy, the leadership obviously betrayed the working class, but it's still the vast majority of the workers supported German social democracy. And as far as this uprising, you know, actually was not supported by Rosa Luxemburg. She went with it, but they thought it was premature. And it was premature because German capitalism was much stronger than what they thought. And it led to the reaction of the rise of fascism. So, and then the position, the split between the communists and the socialists in Germany was tragic and led to the coming of fascism. Again, my point is there has to be a way to find unity. And the communists and socialists worked together in the 1930s instead of attacking each other. One was state power killing communists, and the other one calling them social fascists, worse than the fascists. You know, this is childish. It's childish. And
but Luxemburg saw no basis for unity. That's why she made the split. Well, if unity is not an option.
Well, if it's not an option, then you make the split, and then you try to build unity afterwards. You know, sometimes a split is, obviously, there's no choice, but we should do what we can to stop it. I believe in a party with different wings in it, but I do believe there's a certain level, a certain amount to the right or to the left that they shouldn't be part of a political party. But I believe in democracy. I believe that we look at the United States as the Democratic and Republican Party. I think that the Socialist Party should be based similar. It should be based in precincts, on electoral blocks. It should have different views within it. And I think the Vanguard, it's a mass party, and it's the Vanguard, it's not the party itself, but it's the leadership and the activists that help run the party.
Jason, do you want to respond?
Obviously, DSA is an organization where people are allowed to openly disagree with one another. I don't doubt that many of the Houston comrades will, should Clinton win and should there be no independent Sanders campaign, will hold their nose and vote for Clinton. I sincerely hope they won't be working for Clinton, because if they do so, then I really disapprove, frankly. I'm going to quote, forgive me for doing this, I'll quote from the end of my New Politics piece, and I think it'll sum up what my hopes are, and there, of course, is no guarantee that my hopes will be fulfilled. The entire process involving working inside the Sanders campaign is a complicated process, and I wish that revolutionary socialists, and I do consider myself one, even if others would deny me the honorific, could simply stand outside Democratic Party politics entirely and convince the toiling masses to break with the elephant, break with the ass, build a party of the working class, as the old slogan goes. But decades of Marxists doing precisely this has been no more successful than the attempts in the 1970s by the Democratic Socialist Organizing Committee, which was a larger predecessor of my organization, to realign the entire Democratic Party into something like a Social Democratic Labor Party. The movement to elect Sanders represents the best opportunity to build a much larger socialist movement and hopefully, eventually, perhaps sooner would be better, a split from the Democratic Party that results in an independent left-wing party that I have seen in my lifetime. To make that party a reality, ironically enough, means getting involved in a Democratic Party presidential campaign. Yes, the majority of elected Democrats are ruling class politicians. Yes, the Democratic Party was once the party, a real party controlled by machines, of white supremacy in the United States, particularly in the former Confederate states. Yes, it was the party of dropping nuclear bombs on Japan and of the Vietnam War. I know all this. Everybody knows all this.
Therefore, any involvement in Democratic Party primaries involves dirty hands to some extent. But, to paraphrase a French philosopher, it is easy to have clean hands if you have no hands. Better dirty hands than none at all. And by the way, let's not even go there. And, you know, one may think because one takes correct positions on everything that one is the vanguard of something, but you are not the vanguard of anything if nobody is listening to you.
Good.
Sure.
But you didn't, I just wanted to remind you, you didn't really respond to the question about Sanders' foreign policy.
Well, one of the things that you can do within the context of the Sanders campaign is explain to people who are supporting him, look, our support is critical support. We want all of the universal entitlements and such that he's for. We are critical of him on foreign policy. And should he become president, we will be left critics of him once he is in office on precisely those grounds. We want him to be more forthrightly anti-imperialist than he is. I do think it makes a difference that he is the only presidential candidate that most Americans have heard of who at least recognizes that the Palestinians are human beings. He is not as radical on that issue as I wish he was, but you know, at least recognizing that the Palestinians are human beings and that Israel is destroying the people of Gaza every day, and that Arabs in Israel are not treated as full citizens and full human beings, at least that is certainly a first step. And to say that in mainstream Europe, in mainstream American politics, makes you a sort of ultra-leftist. Sanders is running as a mainstream post-World War II European Social Democrat. That is significantly to the right of my politics. But within the context of mainstream American politics, that makes him an ultra-leftist. That is how horrible and anemic our politics are. And what our job is to do is take what is currently the left wing of the possible and push it leftward.
I mean, do any of us believe that Obama is a socialist?
No.
But you know what? 33% of the population is convinced he's a socialist and a communist. He's taking the Communist Party program and is enacting it. And get on the internet and see our program and what he's done. This is where we're at. This is the perception and the reality. So Bernie Sanders is a radical. He couldn't be any more radical than what he's doing today.
Yeah, so just real quick. So you talked about like the opportunity for the left to try to split the Democratic Party, or like the potential that the Democrats could like be splitting and the Republicans would be splitting, we'd have a four-party system or something. So it seems to me like, wouldn't it also be that Sanders is foreclosing the possibility of a split within the Democrats? At this, like,
no.
So like, to put it another way, like, there's this question of like, how can we like bring, are we bringing people to socialism when we work with Sanders, or are we bringing people to the Democrats? And like, who's using who and why? Why do you think that like we could be like using the Democrats to bring people to socialism, rather than the Democrats using you to bring people to the Democrats, and especially considering like how much more powerful they are, right? So like, and like, so like, what's the rationale? How do you understand what you're doing in that way?
Most of the people we already want to reach already vote Democratic regularly. I mean, it is true that Sanders is bringing in a few independents, but the bulk of his voters are people who vote for the Democratic Party anyway, and we want to get them to vote for Sanders rather than Hillary. That constitutes a movement leftward, right?
But they're gonna vote for Clinton. Like, that's the whole point, right? Or they're gonna vote for Clinton. Like, that's what we all basically agreed on that.
Some of them, haven't you heard of the whole Bernie or bust phenomenon? Some will vote for Clinton and some won't. I mean, there are some very, very virulent Sanders supporters who say, no, I am so disgusted with Clinton that I cannot bring myself to vote for her, so I will either write in Sanders or I will vote for Jill Stein of the Greens as a protest vote, etc. I think, you know, those are the people I want to grab first, personally. Like I said, the question of a Democratic Party breakup ultimately depends on what happens with the Republicans, who, of course, are having their convention first. And it depends. I can imagine that if the only thing that prevents Sanders from becoming the presidential nominee is the superdelegates, that will be a wonderful exposure of how crappy the Democratic Party is. And then I can imagine that if Sanders is so insulted and humiliated by that, he might not run as an independent. He will say, look, there's no way that we can take over the Democratic Party. And we have to start laying the foundations of an independent party at the left. I would note, because nobody's mentioned this, in Vermont, which of course where Sanders was a mayor of Burlington, the one place where an independent left-wing party, the Vermont Progressive Party, it emerged out of the Jesse Jackson campaign of 1988. It was the Vermont Rainbow Coalition and people associated with Sanders who came together to form an independent left party. I would like something like that to ultimately emerge sooner or better out of the Sanders campaign. At, you know, it will be, perhaps it will be episodic. It will happen in certain states before it happens in other states. But the idea that one can never use the Democratic Party ballot line in any way with the aim of promoting independent working class politics, I think, is simply wrong. And the Vermont Progressive Party is the proof of that.
I think it's a great question. I think it's the most important question, is are we building the Democratic Party? Now, I disagree. I think that the majority of the new voters who are voting for Bernie Sanders are voting for the first time. And I know this as a precinct judge, as a precinct chair, and also in organizing the campaign. This will be the first time many people have voted because of their age and because maybe they could have voted in the last election, but there was no one to inspire them. So Bernie's inspiring them, not the Democratic Party. It's a very big distinction. And it's Bernie's positions. So the question is, if they vote for Bernie, are they supporting and building the Democratic Party? Not if the movement stays independent. Bernie, as was said earlier, does not control this movement like Jesse did the Rainbow Coalition. We do what we want. And different groups disagree with different groups. We're like different factions of the Bernie campaign fighting for socialism. Bernie is the figurehead that's mobilizing everybody. But we're the ones doing the work, not him. We're the ones donating the money, not someone else. We're the ones that have the power. And we've already had influence on the Bernie campaign, just as the Bernie campaign has influence on the Democratic Party and on the Hillary Party. The Republican Party will not break up, I guarantee you. Trump already met with the head of the Republican Party, and they're going to work it out somehow. And the Democratic Party is not going to break up at this time. At a future date, perhaps. We're just not in that. It's not a big enough crisis for capitalism for their tools to be useless. They're still very effective and very useful. They're not going to give them up.
Okay, we're a little over time, but if we have one more question, that's really quick. If you guys want to, Aaron, something real quick?
So, one thing I wanted to follow up on Gabe's question and kind of the answers you guys gave with the question of. So first of all, you brought up like the Bernie or bust phenomenon, mm-hmm. and then you brought up like the independence of the like kind of Bernie movement. And so I'm wondering then, if Bernie doesn't win the nomination, what happens when these people are asked to vote for Hillary? And with regards to the Bernie or bust phenomenon, how do we reconcile that with also like the Bernie supporters who are protesting like Trump rallies, right? So what happens if we see a Hillary like Clinton versus a Trump general election, right? Then it does seem like possible that a lot of these Bernie supporters could, who are Bernie or bust, might be pushed to vote for Hillary to fight the right in the form of Trump. And then finally, you've been bringing up superdelegates a lot, so I wanted to kind of question you on that. If you could speak to the fact that, like, it does also seem as though Hillary isn't just beating Bernie with like superdelegates, but also on the ground with organizing. A big example is, I mean, just at the ballot box, Hillary being able to get, as Richard brought up, the vast majority of the Southern Black vote. And another thing that Chris brought up at the plenary last night and that I talked to him about last Tuesday is in Chicago, there's the Kim Fox organizers who are Bernie supporters. I go to the University of Chicago, so I know kind of the students for Bernie at the University of Chicago. And around our primary election, they were organizing for Kim Fox. Mm-hmm.
not primarily green. And something that Chris brought up last night that I thought was very interesting is that, you know, the people who come out to vote for Kim Fox are going to vote for Hillary. With this in mind, how do we reconcile this with Gabe's question of, you know, are we using the Democratic Party or is the Democratic Party using us?
Well, the Democratic Party is not using me, I can tell you that much. I don't, look, in terms of whom people vote for if Sanders loses, I think there is a difference if a fair number of people hold their nose and vote for Hillary because they feel they have no choice, even though I would point out to them, and this is what I would say to them, the overwhelming majority of the ruling class are going to prefer Clinton to Trump, right? Because they don't believe that Trump would be a competent manager of the American capital state, right? So frankly, if the entire American working class sat out this election, if it turns out to be Clinton versus Trump, Clinton would still win. So that's what I would say, and I would say that within my own organization and to the people I'm working with within the Sanders campaign and in Labor for Bernie and things like that. So I would be very open about that. So I don't think that we all need to go out hard for Hillary in order to fight the alt-right, the way the CP comrade does. I think, frankly, if the working class, if it does turn out to be Clinton versus Trump and the working class can be set it out, Clinton will still win. So what people perceive as the lesser evil would still win. Although in terms of foreign policy, she's not the lesser evil, to be quite frank. In regards to who has the superior organization on the ground, I am not convinced that Clinton's organization is superior. It is superior in some states and inferior in others. There are still 22 states to go. African Americans in the northern states do not necessarily, but will not necessarily vote in exactly the same way as African Americans in the South. And there have been sophisticated articles about why this is by black left-wing writers, like I believe her name is Jamel Bowie. I'm probably saying it wrong. I think Bill Fletcher has written about this and others. So one cannot write off the entire African-American vote in advance just because of what has happened so far. I know you don't need, I don't, that's not your intent, but that is kind of how it sounds, in all honesty. And what was the other aspect of your question in terms of what, superdelegates or what have you?
Well, just like, you've been kind of presenting this narrative where the superdelegates are going to kind of, are the reason, like, are the example of, like, the Democratic Party establishment stealing the election for Clinton from Bernie, in a sense. But there are, like, certainly ways in which, like, it's not just superdelegates and Democratic Party elites who are mobilizing in ways that support Clinton at the ballot box in the primaries, the example I gave being Kim Fox.
I don't think it is a foregone, or it was necessarily a foregone conclusion that everyone who, I would have to look at the precise ones, that everyone who voted for Kim Fox, regardless of their race, was necessarily going to vote for Clinton, but I would have to look at that. I would have to look at the polls and see how it breaks down. I admit that I had more confidence that Bernie would win Illinois than perhaps was warranted, simply because the hatred for Rahm Emanuel is so immense and Hillary Clinton is very associated with Rahm Emanuel. And I honestly thought that that would be enough to put Sanders over the top. And I turned out to be wrong about that, but we're all flawed people.
Well, so what Rahm Emanuel did to Jimmy Garcia.
Yes, that too.
So I think what's going to happen, first off, if it's Trump against Hillary, I think Trump will win. And I know we see all these things against Trump losing. It's all propaganda. It's all the Republican establishment and part of their Stop Trump movement, because he's redefining what the Republican Party is, and it goes against a lot of the people that are established within it. His unfavorability ratings are very high, but so are Clinton's. And both, if they become candidates, will have members of their own party which will refuse to support them. And I do not believe there'll be very many Republicans going over and supporting Hillary. For the Republican Party, Hillary is the most hated person. They like Bernie Sanders better than they like Hillary. So I think, like I said, Trump just met with the leadership. He's already understanding that he's got to find a way to win, and he will be the winner. I'm certain of it. And it will be him. And if it's against Clinton, you know, it's going to be a major problem because I think Clinton will lose. And that's it. And I think that's also with the Republicans' leadership fears that Trump will win. And they don't have control over him because he's an independent like Bernie Sanders is. And he may not go along with the total class interest that runs that sector, that runs the Republican Party. We've already talked about it in our group in Houston. And we're trying to avoid it. At the meetings when people bring it up, we move on to a different subject. We don't want anything to split the coalition we're building now and where it's going to be going. So the exec has already discussed this. Our view is that if people want to support Hillary, fine. If they don't, fine. It's a matter of consciousness. We're not going to split over it because the organization itself is more important than how we deal with this question.
Okay, all right, thank our participants. We should be having lunch upstairs right now.
And the very-